This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 premieres Monday, May 13th on Exactly Right. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Murder. My name's Karen, and I sure love murder. How about you, girl over there?
This week, girl over there is played by Georgia Hartstark.
George Hartstark.
Georgia. Georgette Hartstark. And gee, I love murder, too.
And, of course, engineer Steven is here standing by with his mustache and his stuff.
His equipment.
His general style.
It's Xavier Morris.
Supporting.
Of the per cast.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, welcome. Who did I?
Still trapped in the basement.
Yeah, Vince. So we have our murderinos that we call people who listen to this podcast.
We didn't make that up.
No, we didn't. But that's what people call it.
Okay.
And Vince said that. So Stephen has the per cast about cats, and Vince said that the people who listen should be called perverts.
With three R's.
Right.
Just to really emphasize.
You got
to
do that.
I'm going to start doing it.
Okay. Vince said you can have it.
Thank you, Vince.
He said, go. You can tell him you can have it.
That's a free one from Vince.
That's a free one.
Awesome.
Cool.
Hi, everybody. It's episode 32. What's up?
I'm going to
bring what's up back.
Are you?
I have already threatened to do that. What's up?
And that's how she got murdered.
She was so hacky. The town killed her. The city killed her.
She got killed.
Do you have housekeeping?
I mean, I have things I just generally want to talk about.
Well, I'll say mine that are internet specific.
That are important.
Yeah, mine are important. Yours aren't.
Before I start just babbling.
And you be quiet because it's my turn.
How much I hate TV.
Oh, did you watch The Last Night Of?
I don't. There's a block and I mean to and I haven't. No. The answer is no.
Well, then you don't want his DNA inside you. And you'll never get to have it. He was also on Colbert. We actually watched it at work because enough people at my work like him that we were all like, let's watch.
Is he cute and well?
He is perfection. There's something like Disney-esque about the scale of the size of his eyes to the rest of his face.
It's
his nose
ridiculous.
Looks like he got a nose job. It's so perfectly shaped. And then in general, he just has the charisma, but he's very low key. Like he's smart enough to know not to overplay it.
We're talking about Riz Ahmed.
Talking about Riz Ahmed, Britain's own.
And he's got the British accent, man. Like
the
street British accent.
Yeah,
stop it.
But he can do any British.
Well,
accent.
I guess I only heard him speaking in a British accent when he was rapping. So I was like,
yeah, he was turning it a little bit on, but
okay, well, that.
But also I saw him in the Unwilling Fundamentalist. What's that movie? He stars in a movie about a fundamentalist that doesn't want to be
unwilling.
Who doesn't? The word isn't unwilling, though. Sorry, it's part of the title. I'm his number one fan. But in that one, he had like a posh British accent.
Oh, man. No, I want it to be dirty, please. Jesus,
keep it dirty. Hi, Vince. It's this Karen. She said more gross stuff about Riz Ahmed this time. The thing I wanted to mention was a woman named Liam Moffat made us this amazing animated opening to our podcast theme song. You can see it on the Twitter page. You can see it on the Facebook page.
We have a new Facebook fan page because
awesome.
People told us that that's how you're supposed to do things.
Don't be closed off all the time. Maybe open some stuff up.
Yeah. So we have a new Facebook fan page. I will post it on there. It's your, like, how did you feel watching it with your music and your voice?
I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And, but also, it's that weird thing of like, it's very strange when someone holds up something you did and goes, now here's something I did to match it. Like, it's just magical. I love it. It's
gorgeous.
And it's the cutest, like, the style of it is so, like, there's a little skeleton in every scene.
I know. And the way it moves, the way everything flows and moves.
But it's creepy. It's very creepy. It's all perfectly done. So, Leanne Moffitt, thank you so much for doing that and thinking of us and participating in that very creative and cool way.
Thanks to everyone who, there's so many cute drawings of us, even though we just berated them last week.
They like it.
I know. I keep posting them on Instagram. We have an Instagram, My Favorite Murder, and I just am constantly, can't stop posting all day, and I feel like I'm getting annoying because there's just so much cool shit to post.
Well, it's fun to be able to go, like, well, here, because the people like it when you notice their shit. It's, you know,
can
that's
I tell
the
you
whole
my
idea.
Favorite one from our last episode is, you know, the part where I go, a dead body, a female dead body. Someone took a photo of my face and put it over the face in
Sound of Music
where she's singing on the hilltop to all the children, and it's just my little face, like a perfect photo of me with my mouth open, like looking like I'm singing, and it says Stephen showing it to Karen right now. I will put that on the Facebook page too.
Brilliant.
Isn't that amazing? Who did it?
Jessica P.
Thank you, Jessica P.
Well done, Jessica P. That is hilarious. Because also Georgia's face, her mouth is open. It looks like she's going, hey.
Yeah.
But she's holding a guitar. That's hilarious.
So much good shit.
It's very good. You know, sadly, somebody put my face inside of Selena's face.
Oh, no.
No. It's not truly sadly.
Oh.
This is a comedy podcast. But it was a picture of me before I stopped drinking. You can find such a range of hideous pictures of me,
me
online.
Too.
It's hilarious.
I hate it.
It's not cool at all.
When your weight fluctuates, it's you get photographed for things a lot.
Yeah.
And you just
kind of have to separate, and you just have, my thing is just like, whatever.
Right.
I know what I look like.
Mine's not.
Oh my God, this one where they put my face and just, I'm pretty sure it was Selena's picture. It was like big 80s hair with the pink background. Did you see that, Steven? It was, I was like, is that Charles Bronson wearing a wig? Like, it looked horrifying.
I hate that.
But of course, I'm not complaining, because of course all the people who saw it were like, oh my God, this is so cute. Where you're just like, what? Anyway,
I had
to complain. And also just, we looked it up. This was in, if it was from the Minnesota, then you might not know what we're talking about, but last week's Minnesota.
Correction corner.
What's that?
We have to say correction corner.
Correction corner, meow, meow, meow. Georgia talked about a lady who had a disease, and many doctors, frighteningly enough, listen to this podcast.
Do they?
Yeah, because those are the people, or medical students, I'm not sure, people who know how it's actually pronounced.
Well, sorry, not sorry. I'm not a doctor or a medical student.
Never say sorry, not sorry. Just don't be sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were berating me for trying to bring that back when you're trying to bring, what was it?
Woo-hoo. Oh, good point. No, throw that right in my face. I accept that. You're 100% right. But I hate sorry, not sorry, because you don't have to be sorry at all.
Yeah.
I saw that crop up in like girls talking.
It's
where it's
total
like,
girl talk.
Look, sorry, that's not sorry. Where it's like, no. What you start out as, look, motherfucker. And then you say your actual opinion. Sorry, I'm yelling.
Don't apologize.
I'm so tired. Oh, you're right. I'm so tired.
Oh,
here's how you pronounce it.
Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Well, now I'm having a fucking seizure. Jesus.
I got it. There's like, that's a sound clip from some guys on the radio or something in England who also didn't know how to say Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Guillain-Barré. Well,
so there.
Well, consider me wrong again.
Consider me always wrong.
Correction corner. Meow, meow,
meow.
That's
it for me.
Let's see. What do I want to say? I don't know. People are getting their shirts now, and like, okay, this is so, I'm so mad that I don't have it ready to plug this week, but it will be by next week. I'm going to just tease it. We had a good friend help us create a new design for shirts. You guys, all your favorite quotes.
Yeah.
And they're fucking kits. You're going to love them.
They're very cool looking. They're very wearable.
Yeah.
And they're some of the quotes that you love. And so we have the official t-shirts coming out. The official My Favorite Murder podcast. You're in a cult, call your dad t-shirt.
Don't tell.
Oh, well, that's a... Okay, sorry.
That's a tease.
That was more than a tease.
Well, that was one of them.
That's just one of several.
One of several.
Get ready.
And so shirts are going to be like happening. Maybe totes are going to be happening. Fucking, maybe let's do some, I don't know, let's do some mugs.
Why not do mugs?
People want to drink coffee out of murder cups?
Our friend is a very talented designer, Kat. Yeah. So it's going to be an appealing looking thing that also is the thing you like.
Right. So those are coming. Sorry to tease the shit out of it, but that is that. What else? How are you? What do you want to say? Anything?
I wish you guys could see Georgia right now. Her legs are so far up in the air. She is the most casual person I've ever seen in my life.
This is the loungiest.
You're fucking lounging in your home.
Lounging so hard right
as
now.
As is your American right.
Steven, can you take a photo of me lounging hard right now? I'll put it on the vent. Let me fix my sweat. I'm also sweating.
That's cool. Sweat lounging.
And I got a Mimi cat on the... Cool.
I took one too.
Photo just happened. Check it on the... Well, let's plug our places. Instagram.com/myfavoritemurder. Oh, the face...
Ooh, that's like a picture. Finally, a picture of myself I'm not mad about. I love it.
Look at those cheekbones, Karen.
I wasn't even really sucking them in. My part's a bit off.
Look at... You look so hilarious. That's my entire butt. Also, that's going to end up on... That's going to end up on WikiFeet. I promise you. Can I have a WikiFeet page? I mean, look at my feet. They're pretty fucking cute. Let's be honest.
You deserve it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to own it. You know why? Because I don't have a Wikipedia page. So I'm okay with WikiFeet.
So you're going to be fine.
Here we go.
You got to break in somehow.
Do you know what else pisses me off?
What?
I'm not going to tell you. Never mind. I am pissed off that my high school, they have like a list of like alumni who have done things not on there.
Where's the list?
On Wikipedia.
Oh, please, will someone who's good at computers go on to Wikipedia and edit that page? What's the high school name?
Woodbridge High School.
In?
Irvine, California.
Woodbridge High School, Irvine, California.
Also, let everyone know I hated them all. I hate them all.
No, don't put that part in. Now, this is your high school WikiFeet page?
Okay, the fan page. Okay, this is hilarious. So I tried to start the fan page. We can't use the word murder in the title because Facebook is like, we recognize a word that you can't say because you're a grown adult. And okay. You know what I mean?
Fine.
So it's MFM Podcast. Is the name
of the
Facebook
fan page. Cool.
There
so you kind of have to be an insider to know that it's just the initials.
It's like winky wink. And then I think that means also that maybe your family and friends won't know that you're part of a murder group.
It'll I think that's
just
good.
Say MFM. Yeah, I think that's what people are worried about.
Until they see the logo.
Again, grown adults.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing, too. Of all the people we know that say, I'm not weird, I'm not alone, you know, all that excitement. Well, now it's turning into, because then the second wave seemed to be people at work keep catching me listening to this and giving me dirty looks or seeing the logo and giving me a weird look.
Yeah.
But we just got a tweet from somebody who sent a picture that said, was it on the Facebook page or Twitter? I can't remember. Where they hang up a sign on the door that says "Murder Time, Do Not Come In," and then listen to the podcast at work all together.
Oh, like the whole crew does?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she didn't. She was very vague about all of it.
We're shouting her out.
I should find the name. But if you guys hear this, will you please send us at least slightly more information so we can give you a legit shout out, because it made me laugh so hard when I saw that picture.
Or send us a photo of all of you listening
secretly listening.
Also, I love that I've been noticing in the Facebook page, like I'll like look at some comments sometimes late at night and it'll be like comment, and then someone will comment to someone who already commented and be like, Alex, you're in this group, you're in Murderina. Like, oh my god, Melissa, I can't believe it. We're totally good. Like, it's people keep recognizing their friends in there, and it's like hilarious, and I love it.
Well, the same thing happened to me with my sister's best friend Adrienne, who I talked about I think on the very first episode.
She had a hometown.
Yeah, she loved Richard Ramirez.
Right.
So when I said, who should I talk about? It came out of her mouth so fast that that's when I discovered she was a murderer before the podcast had even started. And it was shocking because I've known her since she was 12 years old and I was 10 years old. So, and never knew that was an interest of hers. So she recently started listening. She went backwards through it and has been texting me constantly of like, dude, I love this podcast so much. And
aww.
Adrian and my sister were two of the most evil teenage girls anyone could have had the nightmare to grow up with. They were sullen and sulky. And the only way they would let me hang out with them when she spent the night on the weekend, she would come and stay the whole weekend with us. But they would lock the door and leave me out of the room. I had to do to get in the room with Laura and Adrian was make up a lip sync dance routine to a Pat Benatar song.
Well, we're not moving forward right now on this podcast until you fucking do that. Let's relive your nightmares.
We just basically play a Pat Benatar song. But
yeah,
that's all it would be. And then you'd be like, right now she's lifting her leg straight above her head.
Oh my God, that's so big sisters, man.
Well, and also just if you're younger and you hate your sister, just know that's going to change around when you're like 22, and then you're going to be besties for the rest of your life.
You're going to become the cool one.
Exactly.
My sister knows what's up.
Well, and also I have my sister and Adrian to thank for like all of my training, because that's pretty much the most professional training I got. And then
on stage.
It was pretty exciting.
I think my dad might start listening to this.
I thought he was already.
I don't think so, because he was like, I was hanging out with him over the weekend and he was like, tell me about your thing. Like, they don't understand that it's a thing. And I was like, oh, it's this thing. And I'm like, well, he doesn't know how to download podcasts. And then he would like looked at his phone and he like showed me the podcast and he was like, this? And I was like,
Yeah, no.
It's okay. He's cool.
He doesn't care about the F word, does he?
Oh my God, no. God, you can't have me as a child and care about the F word. I care about a lot of things, honestly. I think he's happy that I'm alive, survived my own.
I am too.
I mean, that I'm alive or that you're alive?
That you're
both
alive.
Of us. Me too.
It was supposed to be a compliment.
Oh, thank you. All right, you guys, we're going to get into our favorite murders.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick pee break. We'll be right back for my favorite murder. Skippers,
this is your time to come on home.
Come on home. Be right back.
If you're like me, you're always looking for a story to dive into. Whether it's a family drama or a mystery to solve, the key to getting hooked is the details. I need rich visuals and intricate storylines, and June's Journey has that and more. June's Journey is a mobile mystery game that follows June Parker, a daring young woman, on a quest to uncover the truth about her sister's murder. This is your chance to test your detective skills, because you'll play the game as June herself. Explore beautifully designed scenes from the 1920s, like lavish estates and gardens, and don't forget to keep an eye out for hidden clues. There are twists, turns, and catchy tunes, all leading you deeper into the thrilling storyline. And if you play well enough, you could make it to the Detective Club. There, you'll chat with other players and compete with or against them. June needs your help, but watch out, you never know which character might be a villain. Shocking family secrets will be revealed, but will you crack the case? Find out as you escape this world and dive into June's world of mystery, murder, and romance. It's all just one tap away. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. That's June's Journey. Download the game for free on iOS and Android. Goodbye.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com. /murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
Hey, we're back, Skippers.
Hey.
Hi, friends. All right. My favorite murder this week is Selena Quintanilla Perez.
No.
And the reason I'm doing it is that it is audio engineer Stevie Ray Morris of the Percast favorite murder tribute. It is? You've been sending me shit.
Yeah, like, I was like sending you texts and I was like, oh my God, I'm watching. And then
you have to see this.
Aaron Brockovich did like a true crime
it's crazy.
Thing about it that I watched the other day. Well, I grew up listening to Selena because I'm half Mexican. And so that music was always playing. And I remember like even listening to the music, just feeling really sad.
Were you little mm-hmm. when she died, so you didn't know yet?
I knew it affected because I would still go over to my family's houses and stuff, and like
she was huge. She was like Madonna times 20.
Well, I'll tell you all about it.
Did
I say even Quintanilla? Quintanilla.
Oh, I don't. I mean, so I'm Mexican, but I don't know how to speak Spanish.
Okay, I wrote it down like I was very.
She didn't know how to speak Spanish either.
I know. It's great. Okay. You fucking, all right. Both of you, shut up. Oops. Oh, Karen, your doorbell phone is ringing. Selena Quintanilla Perez was born on April 16th, 1971, in Lake Jackson, Texas, and was called the Mexican American Madonna.
Oh, I must have known that. I've watched the movie with J-Lo.
I haven't seen it. It's
wonderful.
Gosh, she's beautiful. They were both beautiful. And she was poised to become a crossover success when her death turned her into a legend. Selena's father discovered Selena's, quote, perfect timing and pitch and helped his kids form a band. And she was like 9 years old when they started performing.
Wow.
The band, once her parents lost their family restaurant, the band became the family's main source of income. And they were in poverty. And Selena's career just took them out of poverty. Because they were evicted from their home during the Texas oil bust of 1982. And they moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, which sounds very hot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's super southern in Texas, like down in the Gulf, maybe.
Right.
That's a total guess.
I know. I was like, right. Do I want it?
Well, my cousin Cheryl lived in Corpus Christi when I was like in junior high.
Okay.
But why do I ever say anything?
Is that a big military town? I think it is.
Yes. In fact, it has 25,000.
Let's just talk about Corpus Christi for the rest of this. So then the family band began recording music professionally. And in 1984, when Selena was, I think, 13, the band released its first LP, Selena Los Dinos. Fuck, I hope
that's
you don't get...
That's Selena and Fred Flintstone's dog. Dinosaur.
Hate mail can be sent to Karen Kilgariff.
I'm just translating.
Karen Kilgariff's apartment or house, if the address is... All right. So, yes, Stephen, you are correct. Selena was a third generation Texan of Mexican descent, so she didn't grow up speaking Spanish, so she didn't know any. But she learned all her songs phonetically, mm-hmm. and when her popularity grew, she had to learn it, and she did it very quickly.
Just like Roxette.
Like what?
The band Roxette.
What, were they German?
Or Swedish or something.
Oh, they had to learn English?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, they just sang phonetically. They didn't know what they were saying.
That's funny.
Must have been love, but it's all in that. That she had no clue what that song was.
Oh, but it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds so powerful.
The ignorance makes it powerful.
That's what it is. Like, because that's what love does to you. Makes you a stupid idiot.
That's right.
Okay. Grew in popularity. In the year 1987, she won the Tejano Music Award. I was watching videos to get this correctly, and I'm just screwing it all up. Tejano Music Award for Female Vocalist of the Year. And then she landed her first major record deal with Capitol Latin in 1989. So she performed several times at the Houston Astrodome to sold out crowds of more than 60,000 people.
Whoa.
And after her death, Time described her as... the embodiment of young, smart, hip Mexican-American youth from a tight-knit family and a down-to-earth personality, a Madonna without the controversy. Essentially, she was a huge Mexican-American star in her community and was poised to become a mainstream success, and that community was obsessed with her and proud of her and felt like, you know, she was one of their own.
Yeah.
And she was a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
And she seemed like a very sweet person. Everyone in her band was her family, except the guy, the guitarist they hired, who she ended up marrying.
Oh.
Like, they were... They seem like good people.
It's like a Jackson 5 situation.
Totally.
Like, super talented young kid.
Yeah, but not creepy. And her dad was the manager. So they were very
more
tight-knit.
Like a Partridge Family. But
there
like,
we go.
But yeah. Actually,
or like a Manson family. Fuck. Cut that out. Don't cut that out. Not sorry. All right. Where am I? Cut to mid-1991. Yolanda Saldivar. She was... So you see all these photos of her and videos of her. She was, when she got arrested, she was 35 years old.
What?
That's quote unquote my age. She's 35. She looks like a fucking grandma.
Yeah.
Okay, so 91, Yolanda Saldivar was around 30, and she was an in-home nurse for patients with terminal cancer and just a fan of Tejano music. Just a fucking random woman. She had a history of stealing money from her employers, as well as trying to become intertwined with the lives of other performers. And she attended one of Selena's concerts and became a fucking psychotic fan. With the intent of starting Selena's fan club, she started obsessively calling Selena's father, leaving almost 15 messages until he gave her permission in June of 1991 to be the president of the fan club. Which Aww. Sounds like, okay, you know what? Take this, run with it, do your thing, right?
Right, because you're harassing us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the thing that they didn't know back then that people know nowadays, which
just
is
don't
like,
engage.
Right.
Yeah.
15 calls to anybody at any time is too many.
Yeah.
I don't care if, like, you have a flat tire and you're calling
AAA. But
it's
almost like,
it's
well,
too
she's
many
being
calls.
Consistent and she wants to run this thing and make us more money. And it's a thing that we haven't started and maybe it'll help her with her. Like, this is what I'm thinking was there. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm just saying that's three calls.
Totally.
In a day?
Totally. Totally. Also, like, you don't need to have contact with her
no.
after that. Okay. So as president of the fan club, she was responsible for membership benefits, collecting money and promoting Selena, all that kind of thing. And she actually didn't meet Selena until December 91, but they became close friends and Yolanda became a trusted by her whole family. In 94, she became Selena's assistant and quit her job as a nurse.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. I thought she was just the fan club.
No, president. She became her assistant. She quit her job as a nurse, even though she was making more money as a nurse than she was doing this. Like, she was just so obsessed and had posters all over her house. And people come over, she would just make them watch Selena videos, talked about nothing else, and was just like kind of crazy about Selena.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was kind of that way about Kids in the Hall for a little while, but it was a dark period
Were
of my
you?
Life. Yeah, I was just, I had flunked out of college and I was just weirdly obsessed. It was when they were running them on Comedy Central and I just,
Stay
it was the
home.
Only thing that made me happy.
That laugh was the creepiest. That was, I've never heard that laugh before.
I just realized, I mean, we all have the potential. Everybody likes a thing.
Sure.
Like crazy.
And wants them, like has this feeling of like ownership and like,
yeah.
And like, no one understands it the way I understand it. It's almost made for me kind of a thing.
Yes.
But have you met them and told them that?
See, my thing is that, and maybe it's just from working in TV, I really don't like celebrities. Like, there's nothing more disappointing, and I think most people know it these days from reality TV and stuff. Celebrities are very disappointing in real life.
Except for us. I'm just kidding. I'm not calling us.
Yeah, no, they're just, I mean, the most they'll be is slightly pleasant.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you will have regretted trying to be like, hey, can I get a picture? I'm a big fan or whatever. You're not going to get the
thing.
I loved
you in, and it's some obscure thing, and they're
like, don't care.
Okay.
They don't care. It's super weird. It's like, you know,
yeah,
it ruins it almost. So
yeah.
Good luck, everybody.
Good luck in life with your fucking cute little fantasies.
Whoa.
All right. Well, then, so in 94, Selena starts opening fashion boutiques. She has two of them opening up. It's called Selena Etc.
I didn't know that. That's
yeah,
cool.
I didn't either, because she has this crazy style. It's very 90s and very like on point, like, you know, almost Madonna-y, but a little more hip. It's
right.
cute.
It's those huge. Well, from what I remember in the movie, there's like a lot of ruffles
yeah.
and a lot of like, you know, shimmery, velvety pants and stuff like that.
Hoop
like,
earrings and red lipstick and all. Yeah, it's totally pretty fucking sweet. So she's opening these clothing, these fashion stores, and asks Saldivar to become the manager of the boutiques. So Saldivar, because of doing this, is authorized to write and cash checks, had access to the bank accounts associated with the fan club and the boutiques, and Selena gave her an American Express card for the purpose of conducting company business.
So she put her stalker, she made her stalker the CEO of the
company.
Doesn't
know that she's the stalker, though.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Selena has no idea that she's the stalker. Got she it, just thinks it. She's a good friend of hers.
That's, like, willing to do all this hard work.
Yeah, that's, like, you know... Selena's in this bubble of becoming famous and touring and all these things, and this person is becoming a trusted confidant and is a huge fan.
And clearly is an intelligent woman if she's a nurse and all that other... Yeah,
totally.
Okay.
Yeah, and everyone said she was very manipulative and good at, you know... being manipulative.
Yeah. 15 calls. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
15 calls.
It worked somehow. So within a year, Saldivar had mismanaged the boutiques and they were failing. And then upon investigation, the family finds out that Saldivar had embezzled more than, I saw $60,000, but I also saw $100,000.
Wow.
And forged checks from both the fan club and the boutiques. But Selena refused to believe it. She was like, no way, that's my friend. Like, even her father, who was a manager, and her husband and brother were like, dude. They were like, dude, probably not like that. But eventually, Selena kind of sees some shit going on and believes it. And the family fires her, tells her not to come near Selena. But Selena still wanted to become friends, stay friends. She was like, you don't work for me anymore, but let's stay friends. So at this time, Saldivar purchases a snub-nosed 38 caliber revolver. And here's what I think is the fucked up thing, is is 38 caliber hollow point bullets. Then the bullets were designed to cause more extensive injuries than normal bullets.
Oh, no.
Which, like, throws out... later, we'll talk about it. So on March 31st in 1995, she convinces Selena to meet her alone in a Days Inn motel room, promising to return financial documents that she had stolen, and telling Selena that she had to come alone and that Yolanda had been raped and needed someone to talk to.
Oh, no.
And this, no. She has to make up this lie because three other times in the past, like, couple of weeks, Yolanda had tried to get her alone and it had been foiled every time, and her husband had come or they had met in a parking lot or something like that. So Yolanda was trying to get her alone.
Yeah.
So in the hotel room, they kind of fight over the documents, and as they're doing that, the gun comes out and Selena turns to run and out the door, and Saldivar shoots her in the back as she's running out, severing an artery leading from her heart, and it came out the front of her chest on the other side. So it was kind of like a shoulder shot.
Uh-huh.
And Selena's running towards the motel lobby as she's bleeding, and Saldivar comes, there was a witness said that she chased after her, pointing the gun at her and calling her a bitch. Selena ran 130 yards to the motel's lobby and collapsed on the floor. And meanwhile, Yolanda's now trying to escape in her car. And it was theorized that she's heading to the recording studio where the rest of Selena's family is to kill them, too.
Oh, no.
Like, that's what they thought. But a police officer who was around the corner responded, stopped her, and... instead of getting out of the car, she pulls the car into a parking space and gets kind of blocked in this parking spot. So she's in her car in a parking spot with a gun, won't come out. In the meantime, the motel staff is trying to help Selena. An ambulance comes in less than 2 minutes, but Selena's pronounced dead at 1:05 from loss of blood and cardiac arrest. Her last words were, this fucking makes me want to cry. Her last words, Yolanda Saldivar, room 158. Those were her last words. Like, not tell my family I love them.
Was just trying to make sure they knew who
did
it.
Yeah, which makes me so sad. It's just like the last words out of your mouth are about your killer's name.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I know, you should get them out, but then I just wish it could then be, like, something sweeter. She was only 23 years old.
Oh, no.
I know. Baby. Well, an autopsy is performed, and this is what I thought when I heard about her running after getting shot. She died of heart failure. Wait, no. We realized Selena's heart, fueled by adrenaline, and I think from running, pumped all the blood out of her circulatory system. So I feel like if she hadn't run, she either might have gotten shot again by Yolanda, or the blood might not have.
It's those hollow point bullets.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can get shot and it comes out the other side and you can survive that, right?
No, because isn't that part of it is like they explode inside you. And so when they come out, they just, instead of a bullet hole size coming out, it like rips out. I mean, those things are evil. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, so Saldivar's trying to say, Yolanda's trying to say that it was an accident, that she was going to kill herself. But it's like, well, why did you buy those bullets then?
Yeah.
Like, you clearly had a motive. So meanwhile, there's a 9-hour standoff with Yolanda in which she is in her car with the gun to her head, hysterically on the phone with the hostage or with the negotiator, trying to say that she didn't mean to kill her. She was an accident. She was trying to kill herself, and all these other excuses. But ultimately, let's see. She gave herself in. And she got arrested. She's tried for first-degree murder and claimed that the gun, quote, accidentally went off, and all these other excuses, but ultimately it didn't work. And the jurors deliberated for less than 3 hours. And on October 23rd, 1995, they found Saldivar guilty. She's sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole in 30 years, which is going to be March 2025. But everyone's like, she is so incredibly hated in Texas. She will be murdered. And she has to be in solitary confinement because of that. Because the rest of the...
Everybody wants to kill her in jail.
Yeah. Everyone in jail who was huge Selena fans her whole life wants to fucking murder her.
Yeah, that's... I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So she spends every day, 23 hours a day, alone in a 9-by-6-foot cell. Let's see. So the case has been described as the most important trial for the Latino population, and it was compared to the O.J. Simpson murder trial. It was one of the most publicly followed trials in the history of Texas.
Wow.
Her posthumous 1995 crossover album, Dreaming of You, debuted at number one on the Billboard charts and became triple platinum.
That just gave me chills.
I know. She was the first Hispanic artist to have a predominantly Spanish language album debut and peak at number one.
That's so fucking cool.
I know.
I mean, terribly sad, but also, because I remember that being in the movie where it's like the it's a tragedy anyway.
Yeah.
But this was someone who was poised on the verge of crossing over at a time before that was like before J-Lo, before any of those things
were
happening.
Well, we remember like in the late, you and I and people our age will remember in the late 90s, like this huge Latin pop explosion. And that was like the first time it became mainstream. So Selena's doing this in the early 90s.
Yeah.
So
she's before Ricky Martin, right? Before like any of that, where it was kind of like the sexy, you know, Shakira, any of that stuff.
That wasn't on American pop radio. Yeah. Like that was not on there at all. So she was kind of a trailblazer and seemed like a good person. And this fucking psycho bitch fan, like I didn't know. I always pictured it differently, and it's just like so fucking tragic.
Well, it's also fascinating that thing of like when you can, it's like when you were saying, you know, she's just this random person, but you do trace those things of like a person who embezzles, a person who like those kind of smaller crimes. That's how every story goes, like this, where it's like they always have a background where they're trying to get anything they want at any price.
And they have like gray area morals too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like, someone, if I knew a friend embezzled money, I would not trust that person.
No, even you're not allowed to steal money from other people. It's not your money.
No.
No, you don't get to have...
You have to abide by certain rules in life and not screw other people over.
And you don't want to be that person. Like, I remember there was a cafe I was working at when I was a teen, and I had it in my mind, I decided that I could take a $20 bill when I was closing at night so I could buy beer because they only paid me minimum wage. Right. I had this whole rationalization.
Totally.
And I did it two times was racked with guilt about it. And then the manager told me, did I tell you this? Mm-hmm. The manager, who was also my friend, like someone I hung out with, he goes, something's going on. We're always short. I think it might be the janitor. And then I was like, oh my, because that's what happens. Yeah. You steal, somebody else could go down for it. Or like, I mean, the idea that he even would suspect this person who has nothing to do with it, then I thought maybe he told me that because he knew because it was always me.
He did.
Or was me the two times, and that was just a manipulation, which, God bless you, genius move.
Yeah.
But also, like, and then I, like, the next week, I was talking to my dad on the phone, and we were talking about something else, and then he goes, Karen, there's some people out there that just can't keep their hands out of the till.
Oh.
And then I almost threw up because I was like, I almost wanted to go, that's me.
My dad is, my sweet dad is talking about bad people.
And I'm the bad person. You don't want to be the bad person.
No.
You don't need whatever the thing is you think you need.
You don't. And yeah.
Get your own. You can.
Yeah. Keep your hands out of the kitty.
That's super weird that I talked about that picture.
It is so weird.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to tip it.
No, I don't care. It's super, like, we've never talked about her before.
No, not at all.
That is super weird.
Hey, Karen, you know that feeling when you're stressed out and your heart starts to pound and your mind is racing?
I do. I know it well.
Well, while there's no cure for stress, therapy can help shape your response to it. And since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, there's no better time to try Talkspace.
When you sign up for Talkspace, you'll receive a personalized match with a therapist or psychologist, typically within 48 hours.
Forbes rates Talkspace as the number one online therapy platform, plus their licensed professionals are in-network with almost all major insurance companies.
Once you meet your therapy goals, or if you want to cancel for any reason, Talkspace will provide you with a prorated refund for unused time. I feel like these days people understand the importance of therapy, but the difficult part is just taking that first step. It took me months to make my first therapy appointment. I was so scared. I had a lot of ideas in my head about it. And that's why I think Talkspace is such a good idea, because making it so approachable will just get you there sooner. Then you can actually get in there, figure out what you need, talk to an actual professional, and be on your way to solving some stuff that you might want to solve.
To celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month and the power of talking it out in therapy, Talkspace is offering our listeners $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80.
Go to Talkspace.com/MFM and use promo code SPACE80.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/MFM and enter promo code SPACE80 and get $80 off your first month and show your support for our show.
That's Talkspace.com/MFM. Enter promo code SPACE80.
Goodbye.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Craft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient, because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all made in.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's madeincookware.com. Goodbye.
Did I talk about your murder yet?
What's interesting it? No.
No. All right, Karen.
But you've lived near it. I'm sure you've heard about it.
Okay.
Because it's the Zanku chicken murders.
Ooh.
And there's one On my way from work, driving here.
There's one here.
I drove by one. Yeah.
Let's tell everyone. Let's give everyone directions from Zanka Chicken to my apartment.
That's why I got real vague.
Yeah.
But this. So my mouth is watering.
Zanka Chicken is so good.
Zanka Chicken is legendary in Los Angeles. If you've ever visited here, if you have friends that live here and you're not wealthy, you've probably eaten here because Zanka Chicken is the best food that you can get for a decent price.
Yep.
And everybody knows it and everybody talks about it. It's up there with Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles in that way of like, if you're here, you have to go try this.
Definitely.
And
Pink's hot dogs, that kind of thing.
Pink's is shit.
It's so shit.
But it's fun to stand in line drunk. So go there.
Not going to lie. I have fucking chomped some chili dogs my day.
But for 20 years, I've driven by Pink's and watched people standing in line at 3 a.m. to get those hot dogs. So the first time I went there, I was like, this is going to be crazy. And it was just hot dogs.
It's just hot dogs. But yeah, they're gross in a good way.
Yeah, it's like greasy, it's drunken food.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay, so I got most of my information from this awesome article from Los Angeles Magazine that was written by a guy named Mark Arax, and it's from April 1st, 2008. There's way more information than I could even entertain. So if this interests you at all, look at that. You can Google it and it'll come up right away. And I remember reading this probably 5 years ago because when this murder happened, everybody knew about it all of a sudden and everybody was crazy freaked out about it. It'd be like your local mom and pop cafe, like some terrible thing happening there. But the story behind it is kind of fascinating because it's like, so in Los Angeles, there's a city that's right behind the hill that says Hollywood on it. Right behind that city is both Burbank and Glendale. I mean, right behind that mountain is Burbank and Glendale. And Glendale has the single largest population of Armenian people that isn't Armenia in the world.
Wow.
It's huge. And Armenians came there after there was the Turkish genocide, which there we see parades about and flags about. And it's like, it's weird because I never heard of anybody being Armenian until I moved to LA. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I know a ton of stuff about the Armenian culture simply because like I live in Burbank, I live close to Glendale.
Yeah.
So anyway, restaurant Zanka Chicken was started originally in Beirut, Lebanon, by a man named Vart. Oh, and the pronunciation on this is going to, if you're Armenian or if you're just not a valley girl, it's going to offend you. Vartkis Iskandarian and his family started the first Zanka Chicken in Beirut in 1962.
Oh, wow.
And then they brought it over here in 1983. And it was the chain actually was opened by Mardiros, who is the son.
Okay.
And, his parents were not interested in having a restaurant in America. They wanted to do dry cleaning, maybe go into the suit business. They looked into all these other businesses that were more, kind of reliable than a restaurant. But, Mardiros believed that this, he looked around and he saw how few Middle Eastern restaurants there were with such huge populations of people that would appreciate the food. There was almost no food to feed them that was like from their home.
Totally.
So they opened their first restaurant at the corner of Sunset and Normandy in East LA.
Holla.
Hey. And the LA Times said it's the best roast chicken in town at any price, which is kind of really saying something for the shishi restaurants they have here.
Totally.
The Zagat Guide would say that Zanka was one of America's best meal deals.
Oh my goodness.
America, not just LA, which is cool. Jonathan Gold, who is a very famous food writer, he adores Zanka Chicken. Reviewed it and said the chicken was superb and nothing in heaven or on earth compares with the garlic paste.
Oh my God, that garlic paste.
The garlic paste is what everybody talks about and it was invented by Mardiros' grandmother.
Shut up.
And his mother made it all by hand. So it was a secret recipe. People still don't know what's in it. Oh, it's this white paste that you get with your chicken and your rice and your hummus and your pita.
It's this little tub. It's like a side on the side.
And it is tangy and pungent and garlicky, but there's something else going on. Yeah. It's kind of like butter. Like you can't figure out. All you want to do is eat it and put everything that you eat into it.
Then for the next day, you're belching garlic.
Yes. You're filled with garlic. You reek of it's quite an experience.
Yes.
So that was kind of their secret weapon. Aside from the fact that they figured out that other rotisserie chicken places, they realized you have to move the chicken itself and you have to play with the temperatures. You can't just keep it on one temperature all the time. So they basically kind of went in there and tried to figure out how to give people who wanted to eat authentic Middle Eastern food the best version of that food and not just go like, here's whatever. So, which is amazing. Apparently, one time on Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David referred to it as chicken so good it could end the rift in the Middle East. So, like, everybody in LA knows about this.
It was also
food.
In a Beck song.
That's right. That's right. There's a list on Wikipedia of all the popular culture things. There was somebody on Buffy the Vampire Slayer liked to eat there. They started as this hole-in-the-wall chicken place, and after, I would think, like, over 2 years, they were making $2 million a year.
Holy shit.
And half of that was pure profit.
Oh, my God.
So they were doing, obviously, great. So there were rumors. Oh, so in this article, this is one of my favorite things. In this article, this guy, Mark, the writer, starts out by talking about the Armenian culture and everything, and he says there's a saying that little old Armenian ladies say in Armenian, which is, let's sit crooked and talk straight, which totally made me think of us.
Oh my God!
Isn't that the best? Let's sit crooked and talk straight. That's basically let's gossip.
That is us to a T, and I'm fucking in love with it.
It's the best. So, of course, in the Armenian I keep saying culture, but what I mean is community. Yeah. This family rose to prominence, obviously, because they're just all of a sudden started making this tons of money, and their food was crazy popular.
Yeah.
But they also were huge philanthropists and gave so much back. So they were kind of famous within that community because they were a huge part of it.
Yeah.
So there was gossip. It was never confirmed that Pepsi was offering the company $30 million for the chain and the trademark.
Holy shit.
And this was when it was kind of like peaking in its popularity. And at that same time, even though Medeiros's parents did not want to expand, they just wanted to keep that one, the first shop.
They're so cute.
He was like, he kept fighting to expand. He's like, we have to do it. So finally, they agreed to split. And what they agreed to do was, I think it's Medeiros. Sorry if I know I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but they agreed that he would take the concept and he would build the chain, and any stores that he opened doing that, whether they failed or succeeded, would be on him.
Okay.
Because that's basically what the family was afraid. Yeah. Don't let's not lose all our money. We got a good thing. Let's just keep this good thing going. And in return, he would sign over his stake of the original in Hollywood to his parents and his two sisters. But they weren't splitting. They were still completely together as a family. The garlic paste was still made by his mother at all the Zancus, which I just can't get over. Is this woman who was probably at the time in her, I would say probably late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
And they say in this article, they talk about how this mother, I think her name is Margaret, spelled with R-I-T. She got up at 7:30 every morning and went into work and worked till 7 o'clock at night. And when she was done cooking for the restaurant, she would start to cook for the people that worked at the restaurant.
Oh my goodness.
Like, cook people their homemade, you know, food from home that they liked.
Take a break, honey.
No, she couldn't do it. She was like obsessive, which I love. Oops, sorry. That's that reminds me of my grandma. Like, my grandmother's index fingers were both bent at almost like right angles because of how much she cleaned.
Oh my God.
She came over here from Ireland when she was 17 and she was a maid for most of her life until she met my grandfather. So it's like those old country people are just like, we're here to earn it. Yeah. We're here to fucking get
our
shit.
You're able to do it.
Yeah. That's right. And also, if you start a business, you got to put give it your all so you make it into something.
Totally.
And they really did. They were this amazing family success story. And Madero's, well, he would constantly say to the whole family, success means nothing if we don't stay as one. Greed must never rear its head. There's plenty for all of us. And so he had a sister and she had two sons, and they loved all of each other. They were cousins, but they felt more like they were each other's, you know. He had four boys, she had two sons. They were all, you know, very, very close. In fact, his wife was quoted as saying, before we married, he told me, I'm going to live with my parents my whole life. I will never leave my mother. She was queen of the house, not me. Next to God, it was his mother.
Holy shit.
So just to give you a sense of that. So Medeiros is diagnosed, I don't have the date on this, but I believe it was in like 2001, I think, or so. He gets diagnosed with inoperable bladder and brain cancer.
Holy shit.
So he basically felt like he knew something was wrong. He had pains in places, but he didn't go to the doctor. He avoided it. And so by the time he went in, it had spread. So he holds a family meeting and he tells his mother and his sister and his wife that he's dying, and that when he dies, he wants the Zanku business to go to his four sons.
Oh my goodness.
Now the problem there is that his four sons were at the time, and had been for a couple years, fuck ups. And in ways where the oldest son had been caught trying to cheat on a law school entrance exam, and so was had been a top student at, I think it was Woodbridge University, and so he basically got kicked out and was like barred from ever taking the test because he was going to cheat.
Wow.
So after that, he became an evangelical Christian. He was like one of those guys that stands on the street.
Holy
like
shit.
With a bullhorn.
Yeah.
The second oldest son was tried for attempted murder when the pimp of the sex worker that he had just visited stole money from him. Mm-hmm. And he ended up chasing him up the freeway and shooting at his car.
Oh,
and
he
ended up getting tried for attempted murder.
Wow.
And it turned out to be a mistrial. So he never had to go to jail, but of course that mark, and of course, you know, if this is the richest family in the community and
everyone
shit like this starts popping off, everyone's talking about it. Then the two younger were basically just on drugs. Mm-hmm. But when I was reading this article, it sounded so harsh, but it's like, that's that thing of like, I feel like you can't get rich quick like that and have things just go great.
Yeah.
Because once you start getting all the money you want and you can buy all the things you want, then you start wanting the things you can't have.
Yeah.
And it gets a little nuts like that.
Oh, I get it. I'm going to look at my riches.
I just please watch your behavior is what I'm saying. Okay, so when he makes this announcement, the room goes silent because he's saying they're the ones that should get it. And his sister and his mother are both just staring at him. And let's see, it says his mother sat stone-faced. She didn't ask what kind of cancer he had or what the prognosis that the doctors gave him. Instead, she blurted out in Armenian, "Your sons, the shadow they cast is not yours." And
Whoa.
Then she got up and she walked up the stairs and shut the door.
Holy shit.
Now, she lived with him, as he had said, him and his wife, Rita. She wouldn't speak to him. So she would get up at 7:30 every morning, go to work, come home. They'd be standing in the kitchen. She'd get a glass of water and go upstairs and shut the door.
Your son's dying.
Yes. And as he was getting chemotherapy, as he was losing his hair, he ended up losing 60 pounds.
Oh my God.
He was dying of cancer. Silent treatment.
That's so sad.
It's really fucked up. And it's very old country.
Totally.
I mean, it's how some people are. It's hard. And obviously I think knowing, at least based on what the wife says, the relationship that he had with his mother, this was breaking him. It was terrible.
Sure.
So after a year of the silent treatment, he went into his mother's room and he took down there was a picture of him as a child in Beirut with her when he was like 4 years old that she had kept up on her dresser. He took it down. He took out the picture. He ripped it in half. He burned the half with her on it and he crumbled up the half with him on it and threw it away and then put the frame back up. And
holy shit.
2 days later, their house catches on fire.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. And their house, him and his wife almost get caught in the house. They have to get rescued by firemen. The house burns down. The mother takes, you know, her stuff or whatever. I don't know how much she had left and moves in with the sister. Whoa. So she's gone. And that's the last.
Did the house catch on fire? We don't know.
No, but as he's going into his sickness and on, you know, I'm sure tons of painkillers and in a weird place, he's telling his son, Steve, that the fire is his mother's doing, that she knew based on what he did to the picture that was her. And
oh my God,
I can't stop doing that.
It's okay.
Steven, we need a new setup. sorry. So yeah, he's hallucinating basically and saying that, that it was somehow her doing. He believed that his mother and her sisters and his sisters were plotting against him.
Mm. Well, they are, to not give your fucking kids this goddamn business.
Well, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, they were, it's everybody's worst nightmare. It's kind of like, oh, so this is actually what it comes down
totally.
To, really, at the end. So Steve, having to hear this, and of course loving his grandmother and being in the middle of it, said, can't you ever forgive her? And, Murderos was quoted as saying, God will forgive the devil before I can forgive my mother.
Holy shit.
And then he said, because this is a mother, not a devil, which is super sad. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, ultimately your mother turned her back on you when you were in your worst place. And also it's that thing of, I'm sure after years and years of busting her ass to make this restaurant work, he was going to come in and be like, here's how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's like giving bad news and bad news.
She could also be like, you know how some people get mad at someone who's sick because it's easier than the sadness you can feel?
Yes.
So she might have been mad at him that she had to watch her son die.
Yes.
And it's easier than...
It's 1,000% easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a stage of grief.
Totally.
But she, it's hard. Yeah, because when someone else has a disease, then it's all about them and how hard it is for them. You can't be mad at them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure she had tons of guilt. It was just this impacted problem.
Yeah.
So anyway, on January 14th, 2003, Murderos, who had been bedridden and was dying, gets out of bed, puts on a white silk suit that he hadn't worn in 20 years.
Whoa.
Gets a 9mm handgun and a .38 caliber revolver.
Whoa.
And walks down the stairs of his house. His wife, Rita, couldn't believe what she was seeing.
Dude.
And she said, in the way it's written in this article, for a man so near death, cancer everywhere, he looked beautiful.
Aww.
So he's having some weird last.
Yeah.
Later on in the article, he does not have that outfit on.
Okay.
So they think that she's remembering it because it's this crazy moment, and she's remembering him basically as his beautiful young self that she fell in love with.
I'm gonna cry.
Because it's a really beautiful story, but they lived across the street from each other in Beirut, and he was 19 and she was 12.
Oh.
And he was like, no, they did that.
Okay,
that's
okay.
Not when it started. That's when she first noticed him because he was like
the
high roller. Yeah. Don't be freaked out. It's actually very sweet.
Yeah.
And then when she got older, like she was 18 and he was like 26.
Yeah.
They started dating.
Okay.
So it's very sweet. Like she was in love with him all her life.
I'm gonna cry.
So she said, you're too weak to go anywhere. Please get back in bed. And he said, I feel better. Don't worry. I'm just going to go down to Zanku and see my friends. So she, to see an old friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, you know,
fuck,
was like, all right, I'll see you soon. But he didn't go to Zanku. God damn it. He didn't go to Zanku. He went to his sister's house.
Mm-hmm.
The housekeeper lets him in. She sits at the table. Housekeeper gives him lemonade. His sister comes downstairs. She was in the shower. They sit and have a pleasant conversation and share some lemonade. Then Margaret, the mother, comes home from work around 2 p.m. And she greets him. She says hello to the daughter first. Then she says hello to him, puts her stuff down, sits at the table. And the housekeeper goes downstairs to her apartment because she knows that they need to talk to each other. So they talk for about 5 minutes and it's just normal chit chat. And then he reaches into his waistband for his gun and he shoots his sister across the table dead.
Shut the fuck.
Like point blank. And then his mother screams and runs for the door and he runs after her and he blocks the door and stands in front of her about like 15 feet away from the door, it said. And he raises the gun in Armenian. She says, "Don't shoot me, please." And he shoots her 8 times. He shoots her once, she goes down on the ground, and then he stands over her and shoots her 7 more times.
Holy shit.
He looks around the room and sees his 23-year-old nephew is on the stairs, frozen.
No.
And he just turns around, goes over into the living room, sits on the couch, and shoots himself in the head.
Holy fuck. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. So...
oh my God.
Now, Rita, the wife, well, at least at the time of this article, had to be in charge of all the Zancos.
No.
And it was this whole, they were in court about the trademark and who owned the rights to, it's this huge thing. And I didn't even get into it
because
there's so much more to this article.
The poor woman, after years or maybe however long, taking care of her sick husband.
Yes.
That's fucking stressful as hell.
And raising 4 boys.
Who are fuck ups.
Who were rich kids, who were rich kids. And she was a very traditional, kind of old school wife where she didn't work. She didn't go to the store. She stayed home and was a housewife and took care of that family.
Man.
And suddenly just got thrown into this.
I would never want to raise rich kids.
No. Well, but also because that's not anything you have experience with. So, they're having a whole life that you don't even understand.
They can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
So then after taking care of her sick, dying husband, then this happens. Mm-hmm. And she has to be in charge of so much shit she didn't expect to be in charge of.
Yeah.
That poor woman.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's that rough story behind the restaurant in LA.
Who owns it now? Is it still in the family?
I think they still do, but I'm not sure. Once the murder part was over, that article goes on forever talking about all that part.
Yeah.
So I figure if people are super interested in who owns the rights to Zancu chickens, you can go for it, but I don't give a fuck.
My stomach is growling.
I know.
Are you hungry now?
Oh, that's... I want to eat 4 chickens.
I do, too. I'm like, already thinking about what I'm going to order tomorrow when I go there. Wow.
I know.
What a messy, bloody scene to be cleaned up.
I know.
Too.
Oh, yeah. That housekeeper was bummed. Stop it, Karen.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was good. That was a good one.
I like that one. At least it didn't... I liked it because... yeah, there was food. There's delicious food that I got to describe. It wasn't all tragedy.
Yeah. That was good. Good food talk. Well.
We've done it again.
Speaking of food talk. Go all over the place. Can you guys rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes?
And thank you if you've already done it. Because we're very popular podcast because of you people that listen and tell each other and make little groups at work and shut the door.
And y'all tell your everyone tells their sisters too, which I love.
I know.
Everyone tells someone and then they bond over it.
And the new trend is dads.
Because
I just got a tweet today about a girl who's just discovered that her dad listens.
Everyone tell your dad.
Tell your dad if he's chill with the F word.
Right.
Don't tell my dad.
Don't tell Karen's dad,
please.
At all. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's really lovely.
And stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
God damn
you. Elvis, you want a cookie? You want cookie? Yay. Bye.
Bye.